It's the TV Dudes Podcast special episode, recorded June 8th, 2015, ATX Television Festival Season 4.
You know, guys, usually when you get to season four, shows are starting to lose their steam a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, you've seen it all. It's starting to get a little crazy, maybe.
They're bringing in the extra cousin that you've never seen before.
Right. I gotta say.
Gimmicks.
There are definitely some shows.
I don't know, because I think nowadays, because seasons are shorter.
Yeah.
Think of recent season fours that were pretty good.
Game of Thrones.
The Wire. That's a great season of TV.
So Lost season four is fucking amazing.
Where I was going here is to say the ATX Festival season four.
What, did you think it sucked?
I thought it was great.
It was really good.
I want to know. I mean, I don't know if I put it up there with The Wire season four, because that's a pretty high bar. But it's potentially, I mean, it was a great show. We've liked this show since year one. We had a great time at year one.
We have. Yeah. Although, I mean, I feel like in years past, we've had some issues here and there. Things went really smoothly for us.
Yeah.
Granted, we were press. All three of us got to be press.
Yes, for the first time.
It went. Mm-hmm. It was nice.
Oh man, I got to shout out to Fonz PR. They took care of us.
Yes, thank you very much.
Yeah, they're awesome.
And for that matter, I mean, everybody at the ATX Fest. I heard so many people throughout the weekend talk about how they have the best volunteers.
Yeah. Yes, they do.
You know, because they have a lot of people. You know, we do a lot of festivals in town this time. We got Austin Film Festival, South by Southwest, Moon Tower, and I've only been to Moon Tower of those, but I know a lot of people who have been to all these fests.
Fantastic fest before.
And I feel like ATX is like the volunteers are nice. They're sharp. They're on top of things.
Yeah,
it's really well run.
If someone doesn't know the answer, they quickly find someone else for you, and it's always appreciated.
Well, I think part of that. I think there's a couple reasons for that. I think first of all, the founders have been to festivals, and I think when they put this together, they knew, okay, how can we avoid some of the pitfalls of some of the other festivals? Like, this is actually really small, like from a location thing. You're not going over a lot of places. Like with South by Southwest, it's all over Austin.
Right.
Even before it's as huge as it is now. When I moved here in 2000, it was still all over the place.
Right.
And then so there's a scale thing, and then you also have, I think, the passion of these of the volunteers that really care about TV.
Absolutely.
You know, I think that helps too.
Let's take a step back though and discuss what the festival is.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
For anyone tuning in who isn't aware.
So ATX Fest is a television centric festival. It was created by Caitlin McFarlane and Emily Gibson. They're the co-founders and executive directors, and along with a bunch of TV people you'd recognize, like Kyle Killen, Rob Thomas, some of those guys who are Austin based.
Matchbox 20's Rob Thomas?
No, Grant, no,
no.
Remember that guy? I miss him.
But they created this television festival back in, what, 2012, I guess? Is that right?
2011.
2011, yeah. No, was it 4 years?
Yeah, 2011.
So 2011. And they started out, it was the Stephen F. Austin Hotel.
It's always been the same location.
And they brought in people to do, they had a Friday Night Lights reunion.
Actually, it's 2012. I'm sorry. I just remember that.
I thought it was 2012.
It's 2012. I was wrong. Sorry.
12, 13, 14, 15.
Yeah.
There we go.
I was wrong.
Math works. Anyway, so they created a television festival where the people, they bring in panels from all the, whatever different shows. I remember the first year they had Friday Night Lights reunion. I remember that there was, at least in the second year, I think Cougar Town was one of the ones I went to.
Right.
You know, Bill Lawrence was there. FX has gotten involved and was very, very supportive. So there was panels this year with FX Comedies. And then Fox was all over that show. And they brought Brooklyn Nine-Nine and Rosewood. Grandpa and Grindr.
Wayward
Pines. There was also
Leftovers.
HBO was one of the sponsors here. Netflix was one of the sponsors last year. I mean,
HBO was one of the sponsors. That was the only show.
That was the only thing they brought.
Right?
Yeah.
I was hoping to see some of the Grindr or the other New show.
I mean, have. Plus Leftovers.
Like The Brink, you mean?
The Brink.
Yeah. Well, Leftovers is being filmed
Ballers.
In Austin.
Ballers.
Well, Leftovers is being filmed in Austin. That makes sense.
Yes.
Ballers, I mean, I think your Rock's a little busy since he's got like one of the number one or two movies in the world
right
now.
Yeah, but you know what? So does Carla Gugino, and she was there.
Yeah.
I'm just saying The Rock hates Austin.
Shots fired.
Oh, you're saying The Rock hates Austin? That's a challenge to you, Dwayne Johnson.
That's right. I'm sure he's listening.
Yeah, he's totally listening.
What? I'm a big fan of. Why does he talk like
he doesn't talk like that?
He doesn't talk like Hulk Hogan.
No, not at all.
No, he's one of the smoothest guys. He's very smooth. But yeah, it just the festival. It's like a fan. They do a really good job of like having a nostalgia component to it. Like last year, they gave the creative award,
the Lifetime Achievement Award. They did that again this year.
Yeah, they gave it last year. They gave it to Henry Winkler, which is great. And this year, they gave it to James L. Brooks. Which is cool. So you have that, and then they balanced the nostalgia with like exciting new stuff going on, and also hitting stuff like right at the moment. Like they were really fortunate to have like the creator for Empire here, which I think really kind of, I think that's going to go back as a key moment of they might have even booked it before the show got like huge, because I think I saw a lot of people were going to that and were talking about Empire, so I think that, and plus, and this to also bring it up, the diversity too, because before it wasn't exact. I was kind of walking around, I was kind of like here, what they used to say called putting in a cloud. That was kind of me first two seasons, and now it's like putting in a cloud.
They had a big thing from Stars Power was
they had Teachers, the webisode series, was a little bit different, but it was welcome.
Yep.
And it's the diverse, like when you see the TV culture and you see people who are passionate about TV, it's great because it is like, I mean, we notice, and this is a rarity for us, because, which is weird because Hollywood has always been kind of dominated by males.
What are you saying?
Yeah, because,
but,
yes.
No, all I'm saying.
Talking around circles.
All I'm saying is that it was a lot of females that were taking charge and that were ahead of things, and a lot of female fans there.
That's one thing I noticed. Great. The women, almost everybody I met, I met one guy who was from out of Atlanta for the CW,
right.
And he's their film critic. But most of the people I talked to, just other fellow press, were women bloggers. Or women podcasters.
Right.
Although I did hear about, because it was a Gilmore. Did you guys mention the Gilmore Girls?
No, the Gilmore Girls. We did mention them. Yeah,
there was a huge Gilmore Girls reunion.
Yeah,
right. Massive. In fact, sold out of the theater.
It was probably the biggest event they had.
Giant lines. They had to turn people back. I think that's great. It's like so popular. It's really good. But I guess there's a podcast called Gilmore Guys that covers it, and so we talk about us being the TV dudes. We do a podcast. It's us guys.
I was mistaken for a Gilmore
and
guy.
Like Gilmore Guys.
somebody actually heard me talking about our podcast. Are you a Gilmore guy? I'm like, no, because I mean I've never seen an episode of the show.
Yeah,
and you didn't know who they meant the podcast.
Well,
I'm not like a Gilmore guy.
Well, not yet. Because it was
more
really
like a Wire guy.
Yeah,
but I met someone from Telltale TV. I met the Televixen. That's a site that I met the actual founder and talked to her. She was one of the people who did the roundtable interview with me.
Very cool.
And then someone from Fangirl Nation talked nerdy with us.
Are some of these people Texans?
No, these were pretty much everybody I met was from out of town. I met someone out of Ohio, someone out of North Carolina the first night, who I'm now on. I'm following them on Twitter. They're following me on Twitter. And I got a lot of people who I'd never talked to, I'd never met. Who'd never heard of our show, and so I got to spread the word a little bit to them, and I got more TV sites to follow. So it was really cool for me to sort of get discovered. But yeah, I was really pleased with how women dominated the sort of press was. It is definitely a woman's game covering TV, and so we're the anomaly, and I think that's fantastic.
So do I. But I think one other anomaly that we have too is the shows we cover are just different. Like we're kind of in this world where we either read reviews of people who watch the shows, or we have discussion with people who watch our shows, but outside of our bubble, I mean, they're like when people were naming their favorite shows or like they'd ask a question, they never named anything like we watched.
I noticed that too.
Which was interesting.
There was crossover. Almost everybody watched Game of Thrones.
Everybody watched
Game of Thrones.
Sure.
But like, and I was surprised how Hannibal was like universally beloved at this show.
Oh yeah.
Like everybody seemed to be watching Hannibal.
Walking Dead wasn't there though.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
But you know, when people brought up their favorite shows, it was Gilmore Girls and Bunheads, and Empire was mentioned a lot. Yeah. Shows that I didn't
sadly a dearth
watch.
Of Americans talk. Although no. We went to the Damon Lindelof panel, yes, and he totally was like, I gotta say, The Americans is amazing, and all you guys need to be talking about
that's good.
That already.
Yeah, that's good.
Like, good. Yeah, he was saying that The Americans he thought was the one that's about to break out big, just like Breaking Bad did.
Good. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And yeah, but you're right. Not a lot of people mention The Americans.
The Americans, or even like some smaller shows that we love. You know, like even like, there was one show in particular that like Rectify. There was like barely anybody at that panel.
I was surprised how a few people had heard or had watched Rectify.
And that to me is right up there with The Americans. Is probably the two best TV shows on right now.
Graham Yost was there for Justified.
Yeah.
And
that was sold out,
though. I mean, was it?
Yeah, I tried to get into that. Because it was right after one of the morning panels I went to, and I tried to get in. And it was
I was
like,
curious how it did, but he was here last year as well.
Yes, yeah. Yes. But people, and that's actually interesting because it kind of caught a hot show and a nostalgia at the same time since it ended this year. Because I know Nick Searcy was in that panel. I don't know. I mean, they're supposed to be putting all the panels up online.
Yeah, they did record all of them. They had partnership with EW this year, Entertainment Weekly this year, and I know that they record a lot of stuff. I know the Gilmore Girls went up because I saw the people talking about
Everybody was talking about that. That was a huge hit.
They were smart to get that show. I mean, they nailed it. They brought out
like almost the entire cast. Like,
yeah,
they had like 25 people up on stage.
Yeah,
it was amazing.
Yeah,
maybe I need
just
to watch
the coordination for that. That was just.
I want to watch it at some point.
I have
sure
no idea.
Good.
I don't even know what the show's about.
But yeah, I thought this was a great year for it. And we're going to have various coverage. We did a lot of interviews, that kind of thing.
Yeah,
that's one thing I also thought was great was that despite the fact that we're a pretty small podcast, we were able to get interviews and that kind of thing as if we were just other members of the press.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
I got to sit down and chat with Carlo Gugino for 10 minutes, which is crazy,
which is awesome.
You got to talk to some of the cast of Grandfathered.
I got to talk to cast Grandfather, cast of Rosewood, the executive producers for Wayward Pines, and
the producers for the comedians.
We did the FX red carpet. We talked to everybody from You're the Worst and Married and Sex and Drugs and Rock and Roll. Although I didn't get a chance to talk to the Sex and Drugs.
Can
and
I can I say my moment though?
Yeah,
I had one moment.
Yeah,
it was Sex and Drugs and Rock and Roll. They did like a kind of a round table on the carpet, so it was very hard to get any audio.
Yeah, we
audio.
Didn't actually get any of that any audio.
But they talked to all of us.
Yeah.
And so I'm just standing there, and like, I'm on the red carpet behind Randy, like, just taking pictures, right? And I didn't say a word to anybody.
Mm-hmm.
And then Dennis Leary is walking in, like, the last one, and then there are certain stars you see their persona on TV, and wonder if that's what they're really like. And Dennis Leary, I think, is really like the way he's on TV. So, kind of loud.
His TV persona is the same as his stand-up persona.
Right, which is basically who he is.
Yeah.
So he walks in, he's like, kind of owning the room, and then he looks at me and goes, I like the way you can see everybody's name on the badge. He points at my name and goes, Gregory J. Amani Smith, what kind of name is that? Is that really your name?
Oh, that was you he was talking to?
He was talking to me the whole time.
That's funny.
He was like, is that your name? That's a great name. That's not even a hyphen there. I'm like, yeah, I've got two middle names. Oh, and he just went on for like a minute about my name.
Oh, that's hilarious. I heard him talking to that. I didn't know he was talking to you.
Yeah, he was talking to me. It was like, oh, okay. I had my Dennis Leary moment.
Dennis Leary held court.
He
Sex and Drugs and Rock and Roll. I almost felt bad for the other four people on stage because he was basically just talking the whole time.
That's what he does.
Yeah.
But he was great.
But that does remind me, yes, this whole week we're going to be releasing the interviews that Randy was able to secure.
Yes.
And we'll have little intros and outros for each of those. But we wanted to release this first so you guys get a little bit of a feel for what the festival is. And hopefully you guys are able to buy tickets and come join us next year because it really is cool.
It was a great time.
Do you guys remember, you guys want to talk about any of the panels, anything that stuck out from the panels?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. This one for me was the first year that I was able to actually go to the festival the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I've been every year been sort of working and that kind of thing, and I get to one panel or get to go to the bar or something. But this year I was like, I had a schedule and I ran like 10 to 10 on Friday. I had full everyday panels. So I went to Brooklyn Nine-Nine, which was great. And Dan Gore, the creator of that show, is hilarious.
Okay.
And found out that Chelsea Peretti, who plays Gina on the show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
She was one of the writers' room people for Parks and Rec.
Oh,
which is sort of where they knew her from.
Okay, that makes sense.
And then I went to the It's Debatable panel, which was a bunch of the critics talking about Dan Feinberg, mm-hmm. Todd Vanderwoof, and I keep blanking on her name, but the woman who used to run Television Without Pity and now has a new site that I need to go look up. And Tim Goodman from Hollywood Reporter,
right.
They were all talking about sort of the problem of being a critic in the age of too much TV, and that was really fascinating and really interesting, relevant to our interests.
Hmm. Did they say anything about what it's like to moderate panels with people on TV shows that they don't like?
They didn't talk about it, but they did talk about sort of shows they didn't like, and
yeah.
And they said something very interesting. Someone asked a question I thought was good about sort of do you assign people to write about shows only about shows they like, and how does that skew criticism? And I can't remember her name, but she said
Tara Ariano.
Yes, Tara Ariano, and she right. was great. And I'm going to look up her site now.
Mm-hmm.
She said we assign people who are passionate. It doesn't really miss. She's like, nobody loves Under the Dome. She says, but we have people who love writing about Under the Dome because you never right. know what crazy shit is going to happen next.
Gotcha. Yeah.
And okay. she said, it doesn't matter. Like or dislike is not as important as being passionate about writing about the show.
Okay.
Now, that was really interesting.
Tara Ariano's from Previously.tv.
Previously.tv. That's the new one. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. Then we, Grant and I both went to the Wayward Pines and saw episode 5, which was a big, huge twist.
Yeah. Has that come out?
No. Nope. By the time we've... It's Thursday, and we're recording this on a Monday. So maybe.
If you guys haven't checked into this show, I would say watch the first episode, and then you can watch this fifth episode.
Okay.
Yeah.
And because that's kind of what I did. I watched the first one.
You didn't watch 2, 3, 4?
No.
Oh.
And hey, if you already watched that, awesome too. But I got a quick recap, and then I just jumped in at 5, and I was like, wow.
Yeah. Well, because we reviewed episode 1 a couple weeks back, and I think we were all sort of like, you, I think, Grant, may have been the most high on it of any of us, and none of us were like, this is a great show. We just thought, it's interesting.
Yeah, I thought it had some good moments. I was intrigued, but I didn't get a chance to go back and check it out.
And then because I was going to do interviews, I caught up, and I caught up on episodes 2 and 3 and felt completely in love with it.
Okay.
Yeah.
And after episode 5 and the big switch and the big reveal, and then it's got 5 more. It's only a 10-episode show. It's an event series. I definitely highly recommend. This is probably the highlight of summer TV.
And that was the panel where Dan Feinberg, our boy Dan.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Can we call him?
No.
Because we said hi to him once.
We said hi to him twice.
Okay. Credit. He moderated that panel, and he talked to the creator, showrunner, Chad Hodge, and as well as Carly Gugino, which you also interviewed.
Yep.
But they were really great discussing the show.
Yep.
They had really in-depth answers, and I thought that whereas you want to be a little bit guarded because it's a show full of mystery, I still thought they were pretty forthcoming with a lot of details.
They were
a lot of answers, so as to like not give any of the audience misgivings or fear about like where they're going with it. They clearly know their direction. They're very strong and confident about it, and they seem to be executing it really well.
Yeah. It's got an amazing cast. It's got it's beautifully done, nice music. I mean, it's a good show. When I say Hollywood Summer, by the way, I'm excluding things like True Detective, which I think is not fair to compare to.
Well, new shows.
The highlight of the summer for new shows and for network. It's definitely worth watching, especially if you're a Lost or a Twin Peaks or an X-Files fan.
Exactly.
Then that Friday night was the FX comedy night, which was, man, so good. It had the first episode of season 2 of Married,
which is funny.
And then they don't have any new You're the Worst, because You're the Worst is going to premiere in September on FXX.
Exactly.
But they did show us the season finale of that, which was great, and one of my favorite shows of last year.
Mm-hmm.
And then they showed us the first 6 minutes of episode 1, and then episode 3.
3 or 4.
Of Sex, Drugs, and Rock and Roll.
Of Sex and Drugs and Rock and Roll, which is a half-hour comedy. I thought it was another Rescue Me, like, hour-long, but it's a mm-hmm. half-hour comedy starring Dennis Leary as sort of a has-been, never-was rock musician, and his daughter, who actually turns out to have some talent, and that they're trying to make a band and make it big. And if you like The Job, which is a show he did when he was a cop, that was sort of a half-hour comedy drama.
That was on ABC.
Yeah. This feels out of a piece with that. It's very drama, but with some comedy stuff, and the music is great. They are talking about... they're going to release the music on iTunes the day of the episodes, and they legitimately play the instruments, some of them play their instruments.
Yeah. Well,
and she sings. And
Elaine Hendricks plays his daughter. She's gorgeous, but she can really, really sing.
She can sing.
And then he put his buddies, Bobby Kelly and John Alias in there. And And during the panel,
Bobby, you know, from
he plays Louis' brother.
He's Louis' brother.
Yeah.
Ah.
So
he plays the drummer.
Yeah, he plays the drummer, and it was funny. And it's at first I was a little, you know, I was kind of like, okay, it's another thing about fucked up musicians type thing.
Yeah.
But it's got enough heart.
Yeah.
And it's got enough realism to it, like. I just love because, what's his name? John Ailes plays the bass player. And as a bass player who, you think about, he took it to Derek Smallsville with making a bass player to come up with these dreams of grandeur. Like, they have this, I don't think, this is not spoiling anything.
No, it's not spoiling. This is a great bit.
But the whole idea about he wrote a three-piece.
He wrote a 25-song, it's not a rock opera.
Not opera. It's a
concept album.
Concept album.
About the Irish potato famine.
Yeah. yes.
We got his bass?
Yes. So we want to hear, we got to hear that. But just that, but all those kind of beats they hit, are just they touch upon that music show stuff, but I think Larry's, yeah, he's kind of a grandiose type of dude.
Yeah.
But he's a talented guy.
Yeah.
He's really a talented dude.
He's earned a swagger.
Yeah. So I'm gonna watch it. I think it comes out July. I think July, sometime in July. But, July 16th.
Yeah,
actually.
Yeah.
July 16th.
And it's gonna be paired with Married.
With Married.
So.
Yeah.
So while you guys were doing the FX interviews on the red carpet.
Yep, mm-hmm. Yep.
I ducked in and checked out a little bit of Power, was showing its season 2 premiere.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And I hadn't actually watched the first season. I just knew a little bit about what the premise is.
Right.
It's a drug dealer who tries to also go in on a legitimate career, and he's trying to juggle those two. And, I mean, I don't know. I wasn't necessarily wowed by the end of it. I only watched, I think, the last 10 minutes.
Was it season 2?
Yeah.
Premiere? Okay.
And I was kind of getting, I guess, where it was going. But I don't know. Some of the acting seemed a little bit raw still, I guess.
Yeah, but then again, you're judging it off the last 10 minutes.
I know. It's not really fair. I did say for the panel at the end, I was very impressed by the showrunner. Her name is Courtney Kemp Agbo, I want to say.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Last name is pronounced. She was just really smart as a whip, and like everything she said, it was very... very charming and gripping, I guess.
Well, that'll lead to when we talk about Saturday panels. I saw her on a Saturday panel.
Yeah.
Do you guys want...
Yeah, it's a Saturday panel.
Okay, so...
We'll just run through real quick.
Okay, the Saturday panel I saw her on was called... was diversity, and had all female showrunners.
Ah, see, that is an interesting panel. I kind of...
It was...
too.
The best panel I went to.
Yeah.
Because she is amazing. I mean, just her view on the business, the way she got started, her views about writing, about diversity, because the way she thinks, like when she writes the thing for her show, she doesn't think about like, okay, I need a Latino guy. She goes all the way down, like, I need a guy from Cuba, from this part of Cuba, or I need a Puerto Rican guy, because of all those cultural differences. And she gets writers that have that point of view. Her big deal is like, you know, my guy, I didn't just get a white guy. I got a guy from Europe who's from Serbia for this character. And the way she wrote her character, she made a really good point about sometime with diversity, like, as writers and creators, instead of just adding like, okay, give me a guy from Chicago, give me somebody from this, get really deep down with the diversity that somebody has a different viewpoint of the world than you do.
Yeah.
And so she talked about that, and then the other two showrunners on there was the woman who started Empire, who, by the way, and I gotta get her name. She wrote for Mags Bennett. She wrote...
Right.
She wrote Mags Bennett's character for Graham Yost. And she looked at Graham Yost as like one of her mentors. And she said, you know, I didn't know anything about a 60-year-old woman from Harlan County that had two weed-dealing sons, but I was able to write it because, you know, there's a character and you just have to write good, you know, or be a great writer. So they talked about all that stuff and just... It was hosted by the moderator was Bo Williman from
House of Cards.
Yeah,
who's also like the East Coast rep for the Writers Guild of America, and he had all these stats, and he was really on it. It was just an amazing panel about the inside the business, and also just how they're trying to work diversity in.
Well, what do they have to say about the diversity in Hollywood? Is it improving? Is it improving too slowly?
It is what it is. It's basically what they said. I mean, because a lot of the time, the three women that were up there, one of them was Wendy. I remember her because she was the showrunner for
Wendy Calhoun.
Yes, no, Wendy Calhoun was the showrunner she's the showrunner for Empire.
Oh, okay.
No, but there's a.
So then it was. I just had this in front of me.
It was Wendy Calhoun.
No, yeah, she's the show. She's but there's another woman too.
Then it was Jenny Bix.
Jenny Bix, right? So they often talked about being. They all started out as writers. They all talked about being the only woman in the room, and nine times out of ten, only in with Wendy and Courtney, the only person of color in the room.
Yeah,
and it hasn't really changed, except for people who are in power. That'll make. I mean, they still have battles with like executives because
right.
One of the problems is the executives are all white dudes, basically.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you have to kind of change their mind and get them to buy into what you're trying to create. But like they say, really, there's only one color in Hollywood. It's green. And if your stuff makes money, they will, like, you know, they were talking about what Empire is going to do because it makes money.
Yeah.
You're going to see a flood of that stuff coming in. Like, there's this whole other audience. And then this one woman from the audience did ask about, you know, about Latino voices.
Yeah.
And outside of, like, you know, like crossover Latino stuff, outside of obviously telenovelas and all that stuff. And they just said, you know, you need to write and you need to create it.
Yeah.
And if it's good, somebody will pick it up. So,
yeah, one of the interviews I did on Sunday was with Rosewood. Mm-hmm. And that's an interesting show because Morris Chestnut is the lead and Jana Lee Ortiz is the cop. So you've got a black man who's the lead and a female Hispanic detective.
And he's like a doctor. He's not like a cop.
Well,
he's not like.
And also probably the key thing with the female is that she's specifically, I think, Cuban.
Yes.
And Jana Lee Ortiz is actually Puerto Rican.
Right.
But she was talking about that sort of thing. She's like, you know, I'm from Puerto Rico, but there's some crossover and I can play that. And she said the characters, they're in Miami, but the characters are from New York and she's from New York. And you'll hear that on the interview when you go and listen to it. Please listen to my interviews.
Yeah. Well, that's the only thing that was said about Gang Related from last year, because Gang Related had just all those characters from the different gangs and it really explored the ethnicity of L.A., which I really enjoyed.
I mean, we've seen a lot of that, like American Crime had a very diverse...
They're trying. I mean, part of it is like, you know, part of it is kind of like you don't want to get kind of in a casting ghetto where if you're a Latino male, you're always going to be a gang member.
Right.
You know,
right.
If you're a Latino or if you're a black woman, you're always going to be like the moral compass of a show.
Right.
So they did talk about breaking out of that. But, you know, and then at the same time, it's work. You know, if somebody gives you a job, you just kind of need to take it.
Sure. So on Saturday, did you go to Rectify?
Yes.
And you liked that panel quite a bit, right?
Loved the panel. They had Aidan Young.
Plays Daniel.
They had the mom, Jay. My God. I know. This is crazy. I should have my...
But then you got Abigail Spencer.
And Abigail Spencer and Mark Johnson, one of the executive producers there. They didn't get... The one person I really wish they'd get is a showrunner is Ray McKinnon.
Yeah.
They never get him. But he's like a... He seems like an interesting cat from the way they describe him.
Jay Smith Cameron plays the mom on Rectify.
And it was wonderful. There's a lot of people in that. It wasn't packed, but everybody there loved the show. We saw the beginning of season two. It picks up right where it lays off. Beginning of season three. It picks up right at the end of season two. And there's an interesting twist with the mom a little bit. And just showing like all the fallout of Daniel's decision, but the discussion was just riveting and deep because it's such an emotional show, and they're all into the characters. And Aidan Young actually did a thing where he talked about he has to put Daniel like in a guest house, so he can't visit Daniel all the time except when he gets ready for the character.
Talk about his method acting.
Because Aidan Young does not talk like that. Daniel talks very deliberately and slow, and Aiden's talking the way I talk right now, like kind of fast.
But a little bit Australian.
Yeah, but not really. It's so weird. He did not have like a strong Australian accent.
Yeah.
It was crazy.
Oh, okay.
He hides it. He's got to hide that in another room.
Yeah.
He's got all these rooms.
Australian accent foyer and the Daniel bedroom.
Yeah.
And then
his shit talk bathroom, really.
Yeah. Shit talk bathroom. Yeah, you don't go in there. It's full shit talk.
But it was a lovely. I just hope that show gets more people. And they talked about the length of it because Tim Goodman did the moderating for it.
Yeah.
And you know, because Ray's never quite sure if he wants to continue it. They'll let him continue it. It's up to him.
Yeah.
He's almost got like a Larry David thing going on with the show. And Aiden's like, nah, I'd like to have five or six seasons of this. This can go on.
Well, Saturday for us was Rick and Morty Day.
Oh, yeah.
Because
we went to the Rick and Morty Adult Swim panel at 1. Mm-hmm.
which just killed. Like it was
so fun.
It was weird to see that the room was not full.
Yeah,
it was like not even half full.
Yeah,
and that seemed criminal because those guys were just so funny.
Dan Harmon and Justin Roiland and was it Rick?
Ryan Ridley.
Ryan Ridley. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Ryan Ridley. And the three of them played off each other beautifully. It was hilarious.
Yeah.
And then they showed a little bit of Rick and Morty season two, but mostly they just talked about how they did things, and they revealed a lot of these sort of we had guessed at how improv the creative process was, and they talked about just how improv it was, and talked about guest voices they've got this year,
which
and,
we're able to ask questions,
yeah,
very easily at the end of these panels.
Yeah,
it seems like a lot of people in the audience weren't comfortable.
I asked a question at every panel I went to.
I did too. It was crazy.
I would say most of the panels I went to, I raised a hand and asked
a
question.
Like, I'd wait. I was like, you know, I already have my interviews. I should let everybody else get a chance first.
Don't
but nobody would raise their hand. I'm like, okay, well, I got questions.
Yeah. Right. It was very weird.
Yeah, and they always. The moderators were really good about always leaving room. Sometimes not a lot. Sometimes like one or two questions, but they always left room for fan questions. And generally the questions I thought that they got were pretty good.
Yeah.
So that was nice.
And the panelists for the most part the moderators did a really good job of asking really good questions.
Yeah.
And I have to say most of the actors, and sometimes, you know, you see press junkets and those quick one hit, like 2 minute things where they do satellite feed for people.
Right.
You know, you can't get a really good answer. And I think one of the magic things about this festival is that we have time to, they can elaborate. And then you can see how the actors interacted with each other outside of character or sometimes jumping into character.
And they go into the nitty gritty.
Yes.
Yeah.
Which
yes.
I really appreciate. Yeah. It's not just the, why did you do this project? Although there's sometimes those questions
Well, it's a good starting point.
Yeah,
sure.
Yeah. But it's like, okay, when you were coming up with this scene, what was your whole thought process? Can you really kind of go into that in detail for us and think about all the intricacies with when you had to do the casting for this and like how you had to balance each person's part and like in chemistry reads and all that stuff? And, like they really go into it. It's all fascinating.
And there seems to be sort of a real passion, a real interest in like. These are people who are not just on a press junket. They're talking to fans, and they are enjoying talking to fans.
Yeah.
It's really fun. It's something I don't think you get anywhere else.
Well, speaking of that, so the night before, that Friday night, it was Friday night, of course. And it's funny because it's so close. That's where, you know, kind of going with the Rick and Morty thing. We did see Justin Roiland again.
At the bar.
Telling a funny story about him getting Starbucks in Burbank. I guess he works at the Warner Brothers Studios. It just was funny, but very friendly guy.
Yeah.
Oh, I chatted with a guy for like
a half hour. I had to leave because I was
tired. Yeah, me too.
You guys and I saw him. I was like, I'm going to go talk to him.
Yeah,
we were falling asleep.
But he's his method, like when we went to the screening that night, we walk in and Justin Roiland is like basically freehand drawing to
doodle jam.
Yeah. He's doing a doodle jam to like, you know, early 90s cool hip hop, which I love.
And but when he was every time a track change, Greg's like, oh yeah, this is my shit.
I loved it.
And we're leading me and Grant to be like, make us a playlist,
which
of this
I
stuff,
did.
Because we don't. And so he's got a Spotify playlist for us.
Yeah,
now,
I should put, we should
which
put
I'm
that
very
up.
Excited to listen to.
We should put that up on the website, but or Facebook. But the funny thing is like what he came up with to draw, like. You know, you want to take pictures of it. I took pictures of the cleanest one. I cannot take pictures of this. I mean,
a dog with boobs and vagina, basically sexually harassing Morty.
Yep.
There's another one of
a guy.
Boobs for testicles and penises for boobs.
Yes. Yep. Person. Yep.
Very
it was
disturbing.
Pretty out there. It was disturbing.
But it was awesome.
It was all these like 13-year-olds fantasy drawings.
But then they showed two episodes of Rick and Morty.
Oh no! But before that, they did an improv. Remember that?
Yeah.
That was insane. It was him. It was Harmon and Ryder. And
Ryder.
It was the way they played off
Ridley.
Each other was hilarious.
Yeah.
I mean, it was just and it went off and it could be. You hear that, and then you watch the two episodes. It's like they could easily take that and turn it into an episode by itself.
It was okay. So just to let you guys know what this improv thing was, Dan Harmon basically calls out to the audience and says, "Give us a topic."
Right.
And someone says FIFA, which I was like, "Oh, this is gonna be terrible."
Yeah.
And then someone else says the Duggar family.
Yeah.
And I was like, "Oh, this is gonna be terrible."
Done.
So those are their two topics. They're like. fuck it, we'll do it. Yep. And they just start, they have Harmon setting all the scenes.
Yeah.
So he's describing, like, okay, we zoom in on Rick and Morty's house. We go into the garage, and right. then Rick is working on some device, and Morty comes in a flannel shirt or whatever.
Yeah.
And starts scene. And then Justin Roiland, who's just, like, barely paying attention because he's also drawing, will just start riffing and, like, yep. saying some lines. And then Ryan Ridley will cover all the other lines and come back and forth. And, yep. and what they wove was the most absurd story yep. about, like, going to a planet of tortilla people yeah. that were the Duggar family and a bear that turned into Jim Henson.
Yep.
Yeah.
And all of it was just, it was hilarious.
Yeah.
And it was wildly creative, and you could totally see them making an episode.
Yeah. yeah. It was great. Yeah.
It was fascinating to see their process.
Yep. And then they show us two episodes from season two, which are both hilarious.
Oh, man. They are so, so good.
That's, can't wait for that to start in July, right?
And you can see where yeah. they've improved from the first season. Yeah. It's a lot tighter, and we won't say anything about that.
No, no, we're not spoiling. It's going to be a while. But
it's great, and you yeah. guys are going to be very happy if you've been already watching the show.
Yeah.
Yep. And then Sunday was sort of a quieter day, but I know Grant saw, or Greg saw a great panel, which I saw a little
well,
bit
Well,
the
of. Directors, and again, talking about diversity, they said directors, but there was all female television all female directors. Directors.
And I thought that's important because yeah. a lot of times in comics, they right. do these panels, it's like women in comics panels. And
right.
first of all, that's sort of segregating it.
Mm-hmm.
And then a lot of times they'll do women in comics panels. They're famously, the one in Denver did one with no women on it.
That's insulting. It's yeah. almost a joke.
It's ridiculous.
That wasn't
so. This was not presented as the female directors. It was the directors,
and
but they happened to all be female directors, and they were Mimi Leder,
right?
Betty Thomas,
Tamara Davis, and Daisy Von Schuyler Mayer.
Yeah, who has done stuff on Mad Men right. and Orange Is the New Black, and it was a powerhouse quadruplet. Is that
yes.
Right?
Now Betty Thomas. I've been following her since she was on Hill Street Blues. She played Daniel J. Trevante's
yeah.
love interest. Funny, kind of ballsy, but hilarious. She got her start directing under Stephen Bosco.
Yeah.
And then just, I cannot remember all the comedies she's done, but you've seen some her
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah, I didn't know the name, but I had clearly seen a yeah. lot of stuff she directed. Were you there for the early part where she was talking about how she got into things?
No, I
missed
that.
Because that was fascinating. She talked about coming up through Bochco and
yeah.
that he didn't hire his people to be directors. So he's
right.
like, she said, you know, I want to direct. And he's like, that's great. I'm never going to hire you.
Right.
So it didn't stop me trying.
Right.
But the, basically, you know, that's where it got, she sort of led out of that to direct some other stuff. She directed Second City.
Right.
And that's where she got started directing. But she was funny and smart and interesting, and I fell completely in love with Betty Thomas
well,
at the show.
And they did some real good technical things about how they get their shots.
Yeah.
And like the difference between comedy and drama. Like, for instance, when you talk about having writers on a set, it's almost essential in comedy to have writers on a set because yeah. if the director is shooting something and it doesn't work or it falls flat, then you gotta kind of fix. You gotta fix that joke or fix what you're trying to do. And it's easy to have the writer on set to work with the director, to work with the actor, to try to come up with something. Where on with dramas, the writers kind of just have. Well, especially with Mimi Leder, she because who is the creator of Leftovers?
I'm David Lindelof.
David Lindelof.
He's never on set. Right?
Wait, no, I think he actually flew in.
He flew in
for the panel.
No, but
he's not there filming.
But he's not. Yeah, he's not there. So when she shoots, so they have before they shoot, Mimi and him have different. They have meetings. They'll have like, okay,
yeah.
this is the script. This is the meeting. Then they have a meeting about tone, and
yeah.
they describe the tone of the scene.
Yeah.
And so she kind of pulls all that stuff together, and then goes out and shoots and puts it together. But because they have so many meetings ahead of time, he basically puts it in her hands to visualize what he has.
Mm.
And she said that a lot of drama people do that, except maybe like they were kind of making some digs at Matthew Weiner. But
because he's so controlling.
Yeah, because he's kind of a control freak. But those little things there and then how they all got started. I mean, I love the inside baseball for all that
really
stuff.
It was really interesting.
Yeah, and yeah. they were great. Now, that was then I was done Sunday, but then you guys went
Yeah, we went and saw Grandfathered.
Yeah.
And Rosewood.
Right.
And you saw Rosewood because I was interviewing Grandfathered during the Rosewood.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, I saw both of those. Rosewood, I mean, it's a procedural. If you yeah. like Bones and Castle, it might be right up your alley.
Yeah.
What I will say was weird was it had the sexiest autopsy scene I've ever seen in my life.
Okay.
And why? Why would they make an autopsy scene sexy, you might ask? That's what I was asking. Also, a lot of the dialogue in the very beginning seemed so rushed. It was like, hi, I'm a doctor, and this is my sister, and this is our coworker who's also her lesbian and their fiance, and they're about to get married. Scene. It's just like, whoa, they're really just dropping all of this on us quickly. It's just a little awkward.
But the grandfather pilot, we both liked.
That one is, yeah, that's pretty good. Rosewood, I will say, Morris Chestnut, super charming guy.
Yeah,
I really enjoyed seeing him in the show, and I can see this living on past that. I think it's just a little bit of the legwork that seemed a little awkward in the beginning.
Right, right. Well, you know, you got to get a lot of
once
stuff
they get it out of the way, they're good.
Yeah.
Grandfather
was a good pilot.
It was pretty tight.
Yeah, and it's funny, but it's not like laugh out loud funny in a lot of places. It's kind of funny. Their pacing was quick, and it's really heartwarming. I thought they did a good job establishing the characters.
Yes.
So I'm interested in seeing them. I introduced Danny Chun, who's the showrunner for that. Please listen to my interviews. And he is a guy who worked on The Office and Simpsons and Happy Endings and Trophy Wife and a lot of shows I really like. So I'm going to give this one a shot.
Mm-hmm.
And then the last panel of the show for us both was The Leftovers.
The Leftovers.
Yeah, which was a great panel.
I was so excited.
Yeah,
because Randy also was able to snag us a second row couch seat. They had six couches up in the front of the room,
mm-hmm. yep.
and that followed by all the chairs. And so we got a couch.
Yep.
And we got some asshole sat in the between
us. Oh, yeah, that guy.
Oh, man. Remember? There was some dude that was just saying some fucked up misogynist shit.
Some sexist bullshit that I'm like, I can't believe you just met us. Why are you telling me this?
I feel like he thought, oh, we're guys.
We'll get it.
Yeah, like it was some of the complaints were because of the, I guess there was a lot more women than men.
Yeah.
But he kind of was like, oh, yeah, I'm sitting next to dude, so I can say some of this shit. I just, as soon as he started talking, I cut him off. I was like, I'm leaving that to you, Randy. Yep. You can keep that conversation going.
Thanks for that. Thanks a lot.
Fuck this guy. I'll take the beer he gave me when he sat down.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you're listening, dude. It was some fucked up stuff.
Yeah, it was fucked up. And
Not cool.
I honestly feel bad. I didn't confront him, but I didn't want to sit through an entire panel with a guy being pissed at me.
See,
what an asshole.
Yeah, what would have been funny if he was like, yeah, I'm executive VP of Fox, whatever. I love these guys. These guys are great. I mean, that's like a whole sitcom right there. And then they bring you guys back there. You get the chance to talk, and then everybody thinks you're an asshole because you're hanging out with them. But what I saw, on Facebook was Grant had his hand. He showed his hand. He said, I can't believe.
I written Not Penny's Boat on it.
Yeah, it was because you were very excited because you got to actually shake his hand.
I did shake his hand. I could have taken a picture with him, but there was a ton of people that wanted his attention.
Right.
All I wanted was to go up and say, hey, thank you. I appreciate what you do. And I got to shake his hand.
Yep.
But yeah, the panel was really cool.
The panel
cool
was great because, again, Mimi Letter's there and she's one of the big directors for it. And Damon Lindelof, and they talked process and how it was done, and
they were all so passionate about it.
Yeah, and then they brought in surprise guests. They brought in Carrie Coon, Christopher Eccleston, and from the woman who plays the head of the Guilty Remnant, who's named Ann Dowd.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And they were all really interesting, and listen to them talk about the process and what it's like to work in the show.
And not only that, but the audience, this was the last panel of the day, it was just riddled with other talent who were there excited to see The Leftovers.
The woman who gave Lindelof his first break in writing asked the first question.
Yeah.
Wow.
She was sitting
Kevin Williamson and her were sitting right behind us.
Yeah, and it was crazy.
Hmm.
It was just, we're like looking around
the
room.
That's pretty cool.
Wow, a lot of these people are heavy hitters, and we're sitting in front of them in better seats.
It was a great way to close it out, and that does remind me that one thing that about you going up to Lindelof and shaking his hand, but not like asking for a picture or interview or anything like that. Everybody here is very respectful of the creators.
Mm.
Like you don't really just go up and start bugging everybody like what happens in San Diego and that kind of thing. And so I had my one. Adrian Palicki was in the lobby of the SFA. People were taking pictures.
Talk about your second one.
And
now.
So I stopped her and got a picture with her. And I thought that was good.
And who else did you try to shake hands with?
Oh yeah.
Oh, this is funny.
The Dan Harmon thing. So yeah. So we're was this the
Rick and Morty panel?
It was Rick and Morty panel.
Yeah.
So we went up. We were going to talk to him. And you talked to Roiland a little bit, didn't you? didn't you?
No, not then. I mean,
okay. Well, he was talking to people and taking
pictures.
They
got pulled out right then.
And I was going to take, and I'm standing there, and Dan Harmon walks by, and I put my hand out to shake his hand, like, you know, in my head, sometimes I'm like the, you know, that's the polite thing you do when you're saying goodbye to a friend who's leaving or whatever, you shake your hand. I put my hand out, and I realized,
Randy, you're not friends with him.
As I'm putting my hand out, I'm like, wait a minute, you're not friends with this guy. He didn't even know who the hell you are. So I sort of pulled my hand back a little bit, and he was reaching his hand out, and he saw me pull my hand back, and he did the sort of waving, you don't get your hand shook. It's kind of
no,
funny.
I think he said, well, fuck you. Yeah, I think you got a fuck you from Dan Harmon.
It was awesome.
It was great. Oh, man. So, yeah, there were some other panels we also attended. I went to some on Saturday as well. It was just so much talent there.
Yeah.
It's a really great time.
It was a great show this year.
Yeah, it was great. I felt, actually, this is one time I went, I know we don't write, but I felt like writing more.
Yeah, I have notes from every panel I went to.
So do I. And I was like, I should really write this down, or I should have written more down. Maybe next year, maybe as a special, because for me also just personally, it's the end of the school year, so I actually have a shitload of time. Mm. So I actually have time to write. So maybe, see, then the other thing is, like, and I started thinking about that, and then I started...
Are you going to write or not, Greg?
Maybe not. I don't know.
You start running your wire recaps?
No, I can't. But some of these panels, or, like, live tweeting some of them, because I was following a lot of Twitter feeds of people that were there. And, you know, you put a lot of stuff up, it's amazing how many replies you get, you know, from people.
Yeah.
Like, just by the hashtag, or just by mentioning them, like, oh, you're great in the panel. And they're like, oh, thank you. You know, it's like, you become Twitter buddies with people in a weird way.
Great time. Looking forward next year. The early bird passes are already sold out,
which sucks.
So I'm gonna try and jump on passes this next year. So.
Yeah, we're gonna have to do that.
We're going to try to get the founders on.
Yeah, we're going to try and talk to them and do an interview. I asked Caitlin about it at one point, and she said sure. But I think at that point in the show, you just say sure to whatever and move on.
Yeah.
So we'll see. But I would love to talk to them. Yeah.
Yeah. All right, guys. Once again, go check out. You guys should try and buy tickets. And until next time, TV Dudes out. Yeah.